Rose Aguilar, and this is your call. According to the International Monetary Fund, between 1970 and 2010, there were no fewer than 145 banking crises, 208 monetary crashes, and 72 sovereign debt crises. This adds up to an astounding total of 425 systemic crises, an average of more than 10 countries each and every year. In the new book, Rethinking Money, How New Currencies Turn Scarcity into Prosperity, today's guests, Bernard Liotard and Jackie Dunn, argue that it is time to rethink our monetary system by understanding how money really works. And by doing so, we might then create a different system that supports the kind of society we desire for ourselves and for the future. They say there is a system of solutions already in place in localities throughout the world, and it all began with people simply rethinking the concept of money. In the past 30 years, there's been a tremendous growth of cooperative currencies around the globe, from fewer than a handful in 1980 to more than 4,000 today. On today's Your Call, we continue our agenda for a new economy series by exploring the history of money and talking about what it really means to rethink the current monetary system. What are the alternatives? Bernard Liotard is an international expert in the design and implementation of currency systems. He co-designed and implemented the convergence mechanism to the single European currency system, the euro. He also served as president of the electronic payment system at the National Bank of Belgium. He studied and worked in the field of money for more than 30 years. And Bernard joins us in studio. Hi, welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much, Rose.
We are also joined by Jackie Dunn, an award-winning journalist from Ireland and founder and CEO of Danu Resources. That's a company that promotes green technology solutions. And Jackie also joins us in studio. Hi, Jackie.
Hi. Good morning, Rose.
Thank you for coming in. So it's so interesting because in your book, you say that despite all of the massive changes we've seen over hundreds of years, societal, economic, and political changes, the monetary system is the only thing that has not really changed. And yet we never talk about it. Why is that, Jackie? And how did you even come up with this concept?
Well, I think money is the last taboo, Rose. I mean, we dealt with the sexual revolution in the 60s. We dealt with debt and dying with the AIDS epidemic and the last major big wars that America has been involved in. But money has not really been addressed. And I think part of it is that even the experts in the field, quote-unquote the economists, never talk about what money is. They talk about it, about what it does. And so it's all shrouded in language that is has semantic values that are very, very confusing. And because money is such a hot button in our psyches, we kind of feel an awful lot of shame about money. We don't really want to look at it. And that's why I say it's one of the last taboos.
You also, you argue that by understanding how money actually works, we might create a very different system. Can you talk a little bit about that, Bernard? And why don't we talk about how money actually works?
Well, there is partially a shroud of mystery, a mist around the whole topic, which actually has as a role to confuse people so you don't touch it. The field of economics, as Jackie just said, never defines what money is. It actually explains it as to its functions. And therefore, if someone had invented, didn't have a word for transport, and we only had a word of horses for transport, nobody would have thought ever of creating something like a bicycle or a car, would they? I mean, you know, we are stuck with the vocabulary, which is has its purpose to actually confuse the issues.
So, for example, we say that money resides in the space of an agreement. And if you look at history, everything has been used for money. Everything from cowrie shells to cocoa nuts to axes. So it's an agreement. It's an agreement to accept something as a medium of exchange. And I think once you understand that money is not a thing, I'm sure your mom, when you went, you know, and talked, asked for something, she said, well, money doesn't grow in trees. Right. And she would be right. Money is not a thing. It is an agreement. And with that, everything opens up.
So elaborate on that a bit, because as you said, we just don't talk about these issues. We don't talk about the history of money, which I'd love to explore because it's really interesting. You write about that. But what do you mean when you say money is not a thing?
It is an agreement. It resides in the space of like a marriage, like belonging to a club. It is when a community comes together. You can't create money by yourself. It's something that is community-based. So when a community comes together and says, gee, you know, what are our unused resources and what are our unmet needs? They then can then design currencies, which seems like a very bizarre idea, but they can design currencies to link these two and then get themselves out of their economic, what I would say, imprisonment. Can I give you an example? Everybody uses, that's listening to the show today, uses a complementary currency. Think about it. How many people listening to your show use frequent flyer miles? That is an example of a commercial application of what we're talking about. It started off as a gimmick, you know, to get people loyal to using one type of or one particular company like American Airlines or United. And as a result of that, they changed people's behavior to actually be loyal to a certain airline. What we're saying is the technology is now in place where billions and billions and billions of miles can be processed very cheaply. Imagine if we use that great technology, which is access to cheaper computing, access to the internet, social media, and use it to actually address the major questions that face us as we move forward, such as how do we educate our children? How do we take care of our elderly? How do we deal with climate change? Everything comes back to money and rethinking it.
Right. Well, and in your book, you lay out what we're currently facing. For example, 80% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck. This is double the figure in 2007. Savings accounts are at an all-time low. For the first time in history, the younger generation will be poorer and less educated than their parents. The total outstanding student loan debt has exceeded $1 trillion for the first time in history, exceeding credit card debt. I could go on here.
Yes, you could.
One in three Americans live in households that receive food stamps. We just did a show yesterday about the epidemic of hunger in this country with so much money. So how would what you are talking about deal with these horrific issues and problems that we're currently facing, Bernard?
Well, there is not one solution. We should get rid of the idea of changing a monopoly of one money into a monopoly of another type of money and try to improve it all. That's not the way we look at it. Think about it as a natural ecosystem. Natural ecosystems have a diversity of plants and animals of different scales. And that's what we need. We need a monetary ecosystem where there are solutions for small-scale things at the level of a neighborhood, at the level of a city, but also at the level of the world. So we're talking about a global currency that's nobody's national currency, that reprograms corporations to think long-term. That's one extreme. And at the other end, you would have a neighborhood currency dealing with elderly people that already exist in Japan in 487 systems. So in other words, there are models. Countries around the world have already addressed social issues of the variety we're talking about. Creating jobs, that's another one that's critical in this country.
Right.
This can be done with a complementary currency and has been proven to work, right? So we're not talking of new ideas. We're talking of actually using models that already have been tested somewhere with success and import them here and apply them to our issues.
Another way to think about it is the national currencies that we have, be it the dollar, the peso, you know, the euro, they're all the same type of money. They are bank debt money created by private corporations called banks. And so what we're saying is they're great for certain functionalities. Think of it as a toolkit. National money is like a hammer. It's fantastic for nailing a nail into that wall over there. However, to do other things, you need paintbrushes because you can't paint a room with a hammer, you know, so you need the monetary equivalents of paintbrushes, screwdrivers, saws. Let me give you some examples just to really ground this. There is a system to take care of the elderly in Japan that Bernard has just alluded to, and it's called Furiya Kipu, which means caring friendship tickets, where I go down the road and take care for an hour or two, maybe every day, to a neighbor. She may need a letter written to her insurance company. She may need a ride to the dentist, whatever she may need. And for every hour that I spend helping her out, I get an electronic credit in my Furiya Kipu account. What's really nifty about this idea is that the elderly can actually stay in their own home for longer. Number two, because I am visiting my neighbor, intergenerational connectivity, the fabric of community is being rebuilt because we all seem to be so siloed. And this is not costing the government anything. And as Bernard says, there's about 500 systems working all over the all over Japan. And what's great is I can save up my furyukipu for when I'm old and need help, or I can transfer them to another part of Japan and take care of my mom. So this is not costing anything to the system. And additionally, you know, if I do break a leg, for example, or have a heart attack, obviously I'll go to a hospital. But the billions upon billions that's needed to take care of 1.8 million Japanese that are, you know, retiring or retired, there just isn't sufficient money. And this is what these new currencies do. They think outside the box by the community coming together and saying, what's our unused resource and what's our unmet need? In this case, it's all these old people that need to be taken care of. And the resources are time.
And how many people take part in this program?
My understanding is there are several hundred thousand.
And so basically what you're saying is these complementary currencies would work in tandem with what we have now.
Exactly. We're not talking about replacing one monoculture with another monoculture, because that would be, that kind of pine, right, let's replace it with another kind of pine. They still remain fragile. By having a variety of system, it also makes it possible for society to adapt if there is a crisis, like we have, by the way. If there is a breakdown in the banking system, everything stops. Well, if you have a business-to-business currencies, like we're having already in Switzerland, that has been operational for 75 years, and actually is the secret for the stability of the Swiss economy. And if you have such things in place, then you can actually catch changes in the environment, changes in the economy, and adapt to it so that we can evolve towards a more stable, a more just, a more equitable society.
Talk about the example in Switzerland.
This is a great story. In 1934, 17 businessmen sat around the table, you know, with their heads in their hands. They had just gotten letters from their banks that their credit lines had been cut. And they're saying, good Lord, what are we going to do? And then they realized that they were actually trading with one another. And they were going to the conventional banks to get money, loaned money to each of them to pay each other. So basically, they sat around the table and said, there's another way of doing this. Let's rethink money. And they devised a currency called the WIR, W-I-R. And as Bernard pointed out, it is the reason for the stability of the Swiss economy. This cooperative currency, this complementary currency, is issued when the banks are not lending and they and businesses have the opportunity of paying their invoices and paying their employees with the WIR. So by rethinking money, the reason for Swiss stability is not the glacial water or the great chocolate or cuckoo clocks or, you know, neutrality in the Second World War. It's by having a dual currency system. And about almost 20% of all businesses in Switzerland today use that currency.
That is Jackie Dunn. She's an award-winning journalist from Ireland and founder and CEO of Danu Resources, a company that promotes green technology solutions. Bernard Liotard is an expert in the design and implementation of currency systems. He co-designed and implemented the convergence mechanism to the single European currency system, the euro, and he studied and worked in this field for more than 30 years. And Bernard and Jackie are out with a new book, Rethinking Money, How New Currencies Turn Scarcity into Prosperity. And they're talking about complementary currencies that work in tandem with what we currently have. And we've done a few shows about this issue. And what are your thoughts on this as one of the solutions to what we are currently facing? We're actually going to be joined by Chongti Kan in just a couple minutes with Bay Bucks. This is a local economy solution in the Bay Area. And so if you know of these complementary currencies, if you use one, if you work in this field, or if you just have questions or comments about it, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And then also, one of their main arguments is that we don't examine our monetary system. It is the last great taboo. We really don't understand how money really works, and we rarely ever talk about it. So if you have any questions or comments about that, We'd love to hear from you. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. So now I'd love to go to Chong Ki Tan, works with Bay Bucks. They are transitioning into a resilient local economy in the Bay Area. Hi, Chong. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. So talk a little bit about Bay Bucks. What is it and how does it work exactly?
Okay. Well, I want to just rejoin Jackie to say that the taboo on the monetary system and thinking about it is lifting in the Bay Area as well as in the many parts of the world. And Bay Bucks is designed very similar to the Vier currency in Switzerland that they talk about. So we have two main goals. The first is to increase the resilience of locally owned small and medium-sized businesses. That's a short-term. And the long-term goal, second goal, is to build community. So we work by helping businesses trade, just like in a Vier currency, without needing to use cash. So that frees up their cash flow and increase their profit margin. And then the Bay Bucks that they use does not leave the local community, recirculates and creates and increases local prosperity.
And is this, can you talk about, you know, how did you start and what kinds of businesses are jumping on board?
Sure. We started about a year ago. It was part of a Transition San Francisco project. We realized that we really need a currency for the whole Bay Area in order to create a resilient and sustainable economy here. But there isn't really one operating, so we decided to create one ourselves. And when I was doing that, I was consulting, you know, was reading, including Professor Leiter's book, as well as Professor Greco's book and many other studies in complementary currency. And we realized that in order to have a real impact in the local economy, we need to focus first on the local businesses. And Vier's is the model that we liked very much. And that's why we're implementing one that's very similar to it.
And so on your website, it says join free today. Is this currently in effect? I have to say, I've never heard of Bay Bucks, but I love the idea behind it.
Yes, it's currently you can join free, and we welcome all locally owned small and medium-sized businesses to just go to our website. It's www.bay-bucks.com, and you can click on the sign up button to schedule a free consultation with us. And what we'll do is we'll analyze with you your business and we'll discover how Bay Bucks can help you improve your cash flow and increase your profit margin.
And then what about citizens who want to get involved in this and use Bay Bucks?
We will be rolling it out to citizens probably a year from now.
Okay.
Our focus now is to make sure that the business side works well. Because when businesses are used to accepting Bay Bucks and know how to spend it, then when we open it up to citizens and for consumers, they will have no problem accepting it from consumer, and the whole system will work beautifully.
So the goal is to get independent businesses to first sign up, and then citizens can join. Jackie, what do you think about, I know that you're familiar with Bay Bucks.
Yes, of course.
What do you think about this program?
It's great to see the innovation happening, and I think one of the glorious things about complementary currencies are you don't have to get a note from your doctor or a note from your lawyer or a note from your government. You know, people can come together and really establish what their community is. And a community could be a seniors community, like we were talking about Furuya-Kipu. It could be a business-to-business community, as we're seeing here in the Bay Area. So you define your community and make an assessment of your unused resources and your unmet needs and design a currency. And one of the glorious things is there's so much information available. If you go on the web, for example, and type in local currencies or complementary currencies, you will be amazed at the information that is available. All these YouTube videos, there is so much information. And I think, there's not one size fit all. As Bernard and I have been discussing earlier this morning, there are about 50 different designs of currencies, just alone. Mm-hmm. And it's not a one-size-fit-all. I mean, the community here in San Francisco may have other concerns than somebody in Switzerland or
right.
in Japan, for example. But you can customize your design to your very special needs, and you can view it with your values. And that's a really exciting thing.
Well, Chong Ki Tan with Bay Bucks will be with us for about five more minutes. So if you have any specific questions for him, now would be a good time to call. We have a listener who sent us an email, which I think is a great question for all of you. If people are poor, why does it matter what currency they use?
Brilliant question. Oh my God, this is one of the most exciting things in writing this book. I mean, is interviewing really ordinary people, you know, and how they thought outside the book, where their box. Can you imagine two communities taken from the coastline of Brazil, in North Brazil, because multinationals wanted to come in and build fancy hotels, they just couldn't afford the rent. They were put in some marginalized marshland with palm trees, very little infrastructure, and they stood up in this mud hall, and they asked the question, why are we poor? Mm. And they said, they went off and they made a tally of the money that they were earning, and they came up with some figure which I can't remember in the moment. And Joaquin Seguro added it up. He's the leader of this group. And he said, we're not poor. Our money leaves our district. Because we're dealing with national currency, you know, it floats out of our small little village, and we're left absolutely destitute. So they started designing a local currency called palmas, which means palm trees. Lo and behold, within a matter of months, they created something like 3,000 jobs, and they were able to keep
them. In a place where there had never been a single job. Mm. This is a favela.
Yeah, you've got photos of this in your book.
Yeah, yeah. Astonishing. And what is really exciting about this story is that the central bank put a lawsuit against them. And in the ruling by the Supreme Court of Brazil, they asked the central bank, we rule against you because what have you done to address the issue of poverty? And they said, nothing.
A big moment of silence.
A very deafening moment of silence. And what's really exciting now is, you know, Brazil, which is the great, you know, great economic tiger at the moment, the government of Brazil are now launching 200 dual currency banks based on the Banco de Palmas model. Right now, as we speak, they realize that people can pull themselves up by their own bootstraps if they can rethink money and design money to circulate, for example, locally, as in the case of Banco Palmas.
130 are already operational.
Well, it is amazing when you think about this. You say that you're talking about $662,000, and 80% of that money was quickly leaving the economy, the local economy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Chong, how would you answer that question? If people are poor, and people are poor in San Francisco, why does it matter what currency they use?
It does, because a complementary currency like baht is completely different from the national currency. The national currency is based on scarcity. You have to borrow it from somewhere, from a bank, and the bank doesn't give you that money, you are stuck. You have no cash flow. Whereas in baht, you create your own currency as long as you have a good or service that is needed by the community, you'll be able to create the currency you need, and is backed by your own goods and services. And so there is no lack. No one need to be poor. Anyone who has a skill that the community needs can create money to buy what they need to live on, and later on make that money back by providing their service to the community.
And just quickly, are you planning to do outreach in low-income communities?
We plan to do many things. We just launched. That's why you haven't heard of us. We just launched in January. And so we plan to first do a lot of outreach within our small and medium-sized businesses community in the Bay Area. And once we have the business participating and is strong, we'll start doing outreach to the whole community, including the low-income and community as well.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And we'll definitely have you back, in 6 months to a year to talk about how things are going. Thank you for joining us, Chong.
Thank you.
And Chong Kitan is with baht. As he said, this will be in operation, rolling out in about a year from now. And you can find more information on our website. On today's Your Call, it's our Agenda for a New Economy series. And we are talking about the growth of cooperative currencies around the world, from fewer than a handful in 1980 to more than 4,000 today. So what do you think about this model? What questions do you have? And what does it really mean to rethink money? It's Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
Listening to Your Call on Local Public Radio, we invite you to join in today's conversation. The number to call is 866-798-TALK, and it's 866-798-8255, a toll-free call. Let us know if you're a first-time caller. We always like to hear from new voices on Your Call. If you prefer to write rather than call, you can send a question or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Feedback@yourcallradio.org. www.freetalklive.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, Holly Kernan will have a conversation about wrongful convictions. Ronald Ross, a West Oakland man, was wrongfully convicted of a shooting in 2006, recently released after spending 7 years in prison. His team of volunteer lawyers said his conviction was the result of shoddy police work and witnesses who lied. So how frequently does this happen, and what is being done about wrongful convictions? And then I also have just a couple of announcements. On Thursday, we did a show about the U.S. Navy's plan to increase underwater sonar in California. Well, over the weekend, actually on Friday, the California Coastal Commission turned down this plan. They said no to the Navy's plan to use more sonar in California. And so we'll be following that because the Navy does plan to respond. And then tonight, Malihe Razazan and I will be emceeing the 28th annual James Madison Freedom of Information Awards dinner. It's at the New Deli restaurant in downtown San Francisco at 6 o'clock. And you can find more information on our website. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series by exploring the history of money and talking about what it means to rethink the current monetary system. What does it mean to embrace complementary currencies that work in tandem with what we currently have? We're joined today by Jackie Dunn, an award-winning journalist from Ireland, and Bernard Liotard, an international expert in the design and implementation of currency systems. And they're out with a new book called Rethinking Money, How New Currencies Turn Scarcity into Prosperity. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org, or better yet, leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Elliot in San Francisco. Hi, Elliot.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my question. I'll make it kind of quick. I was recently talking to a friend of mine about Bitcoin, and I was wondering if, specifically because we're out in Silicon Valley, if you're not sure or you've never heard of Bitcoin, it's a digital currency that is decentralized from banks. So there are miners, users who work on computers that are basically handling these transactions. It's getting a lot of traction in certain environments, particularly for companies that want to do business completely outside of the banking system. And I'm just curious if either of your guests had heard of it or if they had any opinions on it.
Bernard?
Well, yes, I've heard of it. Actually, I would not consider it really a currency. It is more a speculation tool. The rational thing to do with a Bitcoin is to get a few and hold on to it, because it is designed to get more scarce over time and therefore increase in value. So what we are talking about is we define money as a medium of exchange primarily. That's a particular community that chooses to use. What Bitcoin shows, however, is that one can be very technologically very creative and is a very clever, if a bit geeky, design behind this, which is interesting. But it's not really a tool for trading with each other. It's more a tool for speculating than trading.
And what is Bitcoin exactly? How does this work?
Well, it's a software that has been designed to issue a quantity of bitcoins that will reduce over time. So it's a technological thing, and it's automatic, on automatic pilot. If you want, you can't change the rules. So the point about it is to show that you can create a currency that actually gets increased in value over time. As I said, I don't consider it truly a medium of exchange, but more a speculation tool.
And I think what we would actually look at here in the United States is time banking, for example. There are about 400 communities dotted all through the country that are using time banking. and they're growing by 1 to 2 models every single week. And basically, the application of time banking is for every hour you get a time dollar. And it's really interesting. I was very interested in your segment that you're going to have coming up about somebody being wrongfully accused. A number of law centers are now offer free legal advice, of course, but they ask the client to pay it forward by going into the time banking community and doing something of a social purpose nature. And so we're seeing these designs cropping up all over the country, which is very exciting. But time banking can be used like for returning vets, getting them involved in the community, people coming out of prison, getting them back into the community. They can earn by doing social good using time banking. I mean, you can grow community gardens. I mean, the idea that somebody has to go to bed hungry in this country is an outrage. We've got great land, great ingenuity, great talent. We're all sitting around waiting for these little green bits of paper by a community coming together and say, we've got this plot of land, let's grow our vegetables, and we can pay for it for the labor using time banking, for example.
And you write about so many examples of time banking. First off, how exactly does it work?
The time banking system is what we call a mutual credit system. I do something for you, I have a credit, you have a debit. So the currency, the time unit, is created at the moment of exchange. It's actually similar to the weir, in that sense that we talked about earlier. It's also mutual credit in the sense that we create the currency in the moment of a transaction. By the way, what's interesting, that makes it impossible to have inflation, because inflation would be that there's more money than goods and services. Given that we create the money at the moment of the exchange of the good or service, it cannot be that way. Time banking has been developed by an American, Edgar Kahn, from Washington, who has spent his life actually helping people that were less privileged than himself, and has invented that particular process. Now, what's fascinating about time banking, from my perspective, is that the IRS has now ruled 3 times already that it is tax exempt. You can use exchanges in time banking without ever getting a problem with the IRS, which is unique.
I love the example you write about in Oakland. The Alameda County Department of Public Health funded a time bank in a neighborhood beset by racial violence. African Americans are now teaching English to Latinos, who are in turn teaching Spanish to their neighbors, and violence has gone down.
Yes. And the reason why is because people are coming together and they're having to talk to one another. And once I get to know somebody, I'm going to be less aggressive towards them. I'm going to see their humanity. So these currencies build community, and with this community currency movement, it is possible to address a number of the social ills, including the breakdown of community, which is really prevalent all through the country.
Well, thank you for your question, Elliot. We have a similar question from a listener who wrote in, who says, for full disclosure, I work for PayPal. Loving the discussion today. What are the panelists' thoughts on how digital currency providers like PayPal fit into this? Can you provide a layer to make the different currencies work together? You can already convert your frequent flyer miles into cash in your PayPal account. And in essence, do they believe that anything that has an exchange of value could be used in the PayPal digital wallet?
Theoretically, yes. Theoretically, yes. Now, PayPal definitely is just a form that the dollar, the U.S. dollar, takes. You know, a PayPal account is by definition in dollars, and it's fed through a dollar account. So we're actually talking of a different world here. Now, what one of my fantasies would be that PayPal actually provides a service to social purpose currencies, for example, internet-based systems and internet networks, that would do this in other accounts than dollars or other accounts than national money. The technology is there. It would be a fantastic way for systems that are trying to develop, that will emerge anyway. But if you want to do something well as doing something good, I think you could. That would be the way I would look at PayPal. They have pioneered a breakthrough in the dollar-based system, but the same technology can be used in other domains.
Yes, and it's also fascinating, you know, you go into third world countries and people have mobile phones, and people are now designing wallets that can be on somebody's mobile phone that are multi-currency. I'm not just talking national currency, we're talking different types of complementary currencies as well, and they're trading back and forth.
And in California, actually, a new program just launched to provide the homeless and poor people with cell phones.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And that could be a digital wallet.
All right. Well, thank you for the email. We've got a number of callers on the line, so let's go next to John in Palo Alto. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for taking my call. This sounds like a really exciting book. I have a comment, a question. The comment is that I think one of the advantages of complementary currency systems is that they allow the expression of demand, which is obscured by the current currency system. In other words, if you don't have access to capital, if you don't have access to credit, and you're in a developing country, for example, your demand for a particular good or service, an example might be a vaccine for dengue fever, is obscured to the rest of the global economy. So I think the kinds of systems you're talking about may help express that demand. The question that I have relates to the last caller's question about PayPal. When you have these parallel or complementary currency systems, how do you go about establishing exchange rates when you do allow such exchanges into national currencies?
Well, let me first emphasize how right you are about the first point. You have, in Africa, you have areas where there is, quote-unquote, no demand for food. There are other places where there is food. However, demand economically is defined if you have a need for something, plus you have the money to pay for it. So if the money isn't there, there is no demand. And we are having situations where people destroy food because there is no demand, while in fact people are starving next door. And this is actually happening in America right now. Okay. The second point about the PayPal...
The convertibility.
Yeah. We need to emphasize that some currencies are not necessarily convertible. Commercial systems, you have advantages in having a convertible currency, and these systems do exist. There is now, for example, a convertible weir that has been developed in Brazil and in Uruguay that we're in the process of introducing in other Latin American countries and in Europe. Now, it doesn't have to be. For example, time banking is not convertible into conventional money and should not be. It is the purpose here is to create social capital, primarily, and therefore interaction between people. The point here is not to try to convert that into dollars, because actually it is precisely what the dollar economy is not honoring, that is actually being honored in a time banking system. So different systems have different purposes, and some of them should not be considered automatically convertible.
And the whole thing about money is an agreement, so it would reside in the space of agreement. So if we were going to do a transaction, we'd agree that X is equal to X number of Y. So we would actually come to that agreement.
All right. Well, thank you again for calling in, John. And today we are joined by Bernard Liotard, an international expert in the design and implementation of currency, and Jackie Dunn, an award-winning journalist from Ireland and founder of Danu Resources, a company that promotes green technology solutions. And they're authors of the book Rethinking Money, How New Currencies Turn Scarcity into Prosperity. And we'd love to hear from you. What questions do you have about complementary currencies? And what are your thoughts on this? How do you think it would work? And also, if you've got any questions just about how the monetary system works, they say that that's one of the problems we're facing right now, is that we don't really talk about how money actually works. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org, or email us, feedback@yourcallradio.org. And now I would like to welcome Terry Garrett to the show. Terry is managing member of Sonoma County Go Local and Sustaining Technologies. Go Local is a network of locally owned businesses, nonprofits, residents working together to build a local economy by supporting independent businesses. Hi, Terry. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Nice to have you. So tell us a little bit about Go Local. How does it work exactly?
Well, let me see if I can frame it in a way that fits in with the context of your show. We're a network of independently owned businesses that are using a shared brand and a rewards card to promote keeping our purchases and our sales local so that we can, of course, boost the economic multiplier locally, but also to introduce and really heavily influenced by Bernard's work in the past, and Thomas Greco, who is also one of our partners in this, is to introduce a complementary currency. And in its current state, it is a marketing currency. And so one of the challenges facing a lot of the smaller and medium-sized local independent businesses is they're competing at a somewhat of a comparative disadvantage with larger businesses who can offer lower prices, mm-hmm. who can spend more money on marketing and advertising to persuade the public to come shop with them, that all of a sudden it's all about price, that the other aspects of value have been decreased or diminished through that marketing. And so these local businesses need some other tools. And so we introduced this, and we essentially, it's as Bernard has described earlier, it's a mutual credit clearing system in that the Go Local rewards or Go Local bucks are created at the moment of purchase. So very similar to airline miles, a cardholder earns Go Local bucks at a percent of the sale upon the purchase of something, of an item or a service. And then they are able to spend those bucks either with that merchant that they just earned them from or some other merchant within the network. And we liquidate their position upon every transaction so that we have some velocity to the currency, that people aren't pooling it or that sort of thing. And we may, you know, loosen those rules a little bit later, but for right now, the idea was to keep things moving and to just introduce this concept and trying to get the merchants to cooperate with one another. I have to say that, you know, it's a little bit of a challenge up front because everyone is very protective of their own domain and their transactions. So it's taking, I would say that's probably been the greatest challenge, is getting the merchants to accept that money earned or these Go Local bucks earned from them can be spent other places and also earned other places and spent with them. That's probably been the biggest challenge, I think.
Well, it looks like you've been doing well because you've got companies from Petaluma to Cloverdale, and it's a wide range from a Mac Advantage Apple computer to the Osmosis Day Spa to Indigenous Design. I love this company. It's a clothing company that doesn't work in sweatshops. It's all fair trade.
Right.
So you've got a nice range of companies here.
It is diverse, but, you know, we have two parts. So as I mentioned, we have the shared brand. So the one idea was to reduce cost of marketing is to use a conjunctive branding or labeling that they could be marketed under, right? So the Go Local is the umbrella marketing brand. And the rewards card then is associated with that, but not all merchants take the rewards card. Now, the ones you just named, like Indigenous does, but since their sales, they're largely wholesale, and they have annually a big event, a big holiday sale available to locals, they do allow them to use the rewards card during those purchases.
Jackie, how does a community benefit from something like this?
Well, it keeps the money local, doesn't it? And then there's a velocity of spending this money locally that really creates jobs, that causes demand for local products and services, which is really, really exciting. And let's remember, this is the early days of complementary currencies. You know, it's like the early days of flight. It's a miracle that they actually fly. But we will actually literally take off. And you have the example of Switzerland, for example, with the Weir. I mean, that is about 80 years old, and there are now about 70,000 companies, small and medium-sized businesses, actually partaking in the service. So yes, there's going to be some clunkiness at the beginning of some of these programs, but it's exciting that the conversation is happening, and I think we're going to see this incredible flowering of complementary currencies all over the country.
The way I look at it is the following. We all heard too much, actually, about the information age throughout the 90s. And somehow everything will change except money, which is ironic because money is information. All right. So why is there the thought that this would be kind of like a short-term little thing? Nobody been thinking that the information age will die out. What we're believing is that the information age will actually propel irresistibly the creation of a monetary ecosystem, which will actually provide more stability and more equity than is currently possible with a monoculture.
And what we're actually saying and making very strong point, really want to underscore this, it is going to be impossible to address the needs of our emerging age without rethinking money, because we have a system that's 400 years old that was invented with a very different mindset, with a very different set of problems, with a very different agenda. And we now have a new agenda. And the great thing is what we're talking about is the democratization of money.
Well, and we have a big question about the debt crisis. So let's hear from next from Nemo in San Francisco. Hi, Nemo. Welcome to the show. Hello, Nemo.
I do. I want to hear about debt. The it seems that the linchpin of our of the global economy is debt. We're all enslaved. Global, national debt. College loans, credit cards, mortgage debt. We all have a chain around our ankle, and how are we going to deal with that?
Yeah, well, Jackie and Bernard write extensively about this in their book. So what about the debt crisis?
Well, our money is debt.
Yeah.
Our money is created from debt, Bernard.
All conventional money is fundamentally created through debt. A debt to government, debt to corporations, debt to individuals. So every dollar you've seen, whether it's electronic or paper, by the way, is someone's debt. What we're talking about in this book is precisely getting out of that box by having other things, other means of exchange than debt-based currency. The kind of things we're talking about is not, you know, is not debt-based. You don't have a central issuer of time units that then you can start spending. We created ourselves. That's the whole point.
But what about the people who are currently dealing with debt?
Well,
And just dig a bigger and bigger hole, because you talk about compounding interest.
Well, stop digging. If you're in a hole, stop digging and go to your neighbors, go to your community, however you want to define your community, and get engaged in a conversation is, what are our unused resources? What are our unmet needs? Let's see what they are. And it's more of a pull than a push. It really got to emerge organically and then design currencies that actually address the needs of that community. And they're all out there.
These new currencies can replace things that you currently would need dollars for, including learning, including education, including healthcare.
Well, I mean, what you've got is, you know, some students, adults, who are still trying to pay off their student debt,
yes,
hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yes.
So you've got that, and then you've got poor people who don't have bank accounts, and so they go to these corner shops, and they're hit big time, 20% sometimes, to cash a check.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in debt because sometimes they have to borrow $100, and then they have to pay back like $140. So right now, how do you deal with this? I mean, there are obviously political solutions to this.
Yes. And the thing is, you don't have to ask permission to set up a currency. You go out and you set it up. And I think the Banco Palmas that we're talking about, you know, in the Brazilian idea, when they asked the question, why are we poor? And basically they set up two types of very friendly loans. One is necessity loan that you need like $50 to get through the week, as it were. And basically, you don't need to show collateral. You just go to the neighbors and say, hey, is Johnny or is Mary a good person? They say, yes, they're really trustworthy, and they would get the loan. And then there were bigger loans to actually start off a business, whatever. So these types of loans are really, really important that don't bear interest. And that's the very important thing. They don't bear interest. It's like a helping hand within the community. And these new models, I think, need to be looked at and customized to whatever community we're dealing with.
All right. Thank you for the call, Nemo. And let's go next to Roger in San Francisco. Hi, Roger.
Yes, thank you. Some years ago, I became interested in money. What I did was I wanted money that I could share with others, but I wanted to retain the money also. So I bought an ancient coin collection. I developed a coin collection. It was at the Legion of Honor. When you start tinkering with money, and by the way, I applaud your guest. I think what they're doing is, it for many people in this country, it will be great. I don't know how it'll apply for the whole country. But when you just give you an idea, the oldest coin I have in my collection is a Ptolemy coin, 300 BC. Money has been in circulation literally for all of mankind, whether it's trading.
Roger,
you need cash. So, you need something, silver, gold, whatever. And that is the key, what people will accept.
You're absolutely right. It lives in the space of an agreement. So whatever your community will accept, whether it is coins, whether it is cocoa nuts, whether it's a bay bucks, weir, whatever it is, furiaikipo, it is. We are now able to jump outside the box of a one-stream conversation, which is using conventional bank debt money. And this is what the exciting conversation is.
Anything to add, Bernard?
Well... The history of money is a fascinating one. The old patriarchal societies in history have, we're talking now Sumer, we're talking Greece that you were referring to, we're talking Rome, and since the Renaissance ourselves in the Western society, all have imposed a single type of currency. And the coin you're having in your hands is one of those examples coming from that civilization. Now, The contrast with that, societies that honor feminine values, like dynastic Egypt, or like the Central Middle Ages in Europe, have done the opposite. They have created an ecosystem of money. Mm-hmm. And you had this coins as part of it, just like we're talking dollars are part of our future. But it don't have to be the only currency. And that's the breakthrough.
And so how, just in our minute left... We are facing a major economic crisis right now with mass unemployment. How do you see this affecting these complementary currencies affecting what we're dealing with now?
It is a way forward. It's neither left nor right. It is forward. And with by rethinking money, by creating new complementary currencies, it is possible to address all the problems that we face. Everything from unemployment, how we take care of our elderly, how do we educate our children, how do we make sure no child goes to bed without food.
This is also a big threat to the system we have right now.
Well, it's the way out for the system because with working, we're not saying let's replace the system at the moment with these complementary currencies. We're saying let's move in tandem. It is linking arm in arm and moving forward to provide what I said was the toolbox of solution. Hammers, saws, nails.
The Swiss economy is a capitalist economy. I don't think it's a threat. And they've done it for 80 years.
Bernard Liotard and Jackie Dunn are authors of the book Rethinking Money, How New Currencies Turn Scarcity into Prosperity. And Terry Garrett is managing member of Sonoma County Go Local. Thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Rose.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. What leads to wrongful convictions? On the next Your Call, we'll talk about how innocent people end up behind bars. Ronald Ross, a West Oakland man who was wrongly convicted of a shooting in 2006, was recently released after spending 7 years in prison. His team of volunteer lawyers argued that his conviction was the result of shoddy police work and witnesses who lied. How frequently are innocent people imprisoned, and what's being done about this? It's Your Call with Holly Kernan and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.